Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We trust you had a great Labor Day weekend. And Jim, speaking of labor, we've got a big job speech, the much ballyhooed job speech of the president coming Thursday, but it'll be done in time for kickoff because we all have our priorities. There's, of course, Labor Day weekend brings out other jobs plans, and a couple of Republicans who are considered more to the moderate to even liberal side, depending on the issue, have recently come out with jobs plans, and I think it's pretty safe to say, even though there are critics of both plans, that they're going to be better than whatever the president ponies up on Thursday night. John Huntsman, for all the flack he's taken on a number of issues, and much of it deserved, had put out a jobs plan last week in which he was very aggressive in tax cuts and regulations. And it looks like Mitt Romney's new plan, which we're just starting to see the details of, kind of goes in that same direction. Obviously, some plans will be more conservative than others, and so we haven't seen them all yet on the most important issue of this campaign. But it looks like on the fundamentals, at least the plans we've seen so far are heading in the right direction, whereas the one we're expecting from the president, not so much.
Yeah, one of the things that's jumping out at me about Mitt Romney's plan, which will be officially unveiled today, he gave kind of a preview in USA Today, and he talks about the cost of regulations on small businesses and actually in big businesses as well. So he says that if he were elected president, he would direct every government agency to limit annual increases in regulatory costs to zero. Which is, I'm sure there are probably a lot of people who find this logistically challenging. What he says is that anytime you want to impose a new regulation that will, you know, impose new costs on business, you have to remove another one of equivalent cost, which will be kind of fascinating to see how that would work in practice. I think what I like about this, coupled with the our good martini from Friday about Obama withdrawing one of his EPA regulation proposals. Generally, regulations are not something that most Americans pay much attention to, with good reason. They're generally kind of obscure and written in bureaucraties, and you know, on paper, they don't. Unless the cop is coming to you and saying you have to obey this, people don't necessarily pay attention to it. But businesses do have to pay attention to this because there are all kinds of regulatory agencies that they have to have their ducks in a row for. So, the more the discussion in 2012 is about regulations and the idea that government just, you know, when they impose these things, that there are actual costs, that businesses, the more time they have to spend jumping through hoops for a federal bureaucrat is less time that they're spending on serving their customers or doing what they do best. You know, I think it was Coolidge who said the business of America is business. Well, now the business of American businesses is taking care of the government's business. And to see Republican candidates going after this, I think, is a very helpful direction of things. The more we can get the public just even recognizing that there is a cost to these kinds of regulations, I think shifts the terrain in a better direction for conservatives and Republicans.
And lest you think the president has seen the light just a couple days before his big job creation speech, here's just a sample of what he had to tell a big group of union organizers on over the weekend.
You are creating prosperity when you share in prosperity. So when I hear some of these folks trying to take collective bargaining rights away, trying to pass so-called right-to-work laws for private sector workers that really mean the right to work for less and less and less.
You know what those states have, though, Jim? Jobs. He gave that speech in Michigan where they've been in their own world of recession for several years. And, of course, these people are moving it up.
At least a decade through all the Granholm years.
Absolutely. And so he's slamming all these states that clearly have the best job creation record from, you know, Virginia to the Carolinas on down to Florida and obviously over to Texas. And so clearly his plan is to make sure that no states have job creation.
Basically his pledge is, I will make the entire country as strong as Detroit. As prosperous and as healthy and as great as Detroit is what it today. Frustrating and depressing and irritating. I guess one of the things kind of striking about this is that when you talk about right to work is I want to work at a place and I shouldn't have to join a union to do so.
Right.
It strikes me as a basic fundamental American right. Who the heck is some union to say that if you want to take this job, you have to? Is kind of baffling. The only way Obama can somehow win this argument, I think he recognizes that, you know, is to say, well, it's really a right to work less law. It's, you know, like, no, it's an issue of freedom. Now, look, there are many unions that do a fine job of representing their workers. And if somebody wants to join them, go right ahead. But I don't think that you should be compelled by law with the force of the government basically, you know, making you join an organization you don't want to. It strikes me as fundamentally un-American. Now, for Obama, he knows he can't win that argument, so he has to turn it into wages. You know, it's not about, you know, whereas I think for most Americans, I think there's a reason right to work laws have passed in so many different places, and you're starting to see pushes for them in some very non-traditional areas. So, you know, it's what we've come to expect from Obama, sadly.
Exactly. And as you mentioned, there are some unions that do a good job of representing their workers. They're reasonable. And then there are others that perpetuate a stereotype. And some of the reasons there are stereotypes is because there are people like James Hoffa. He is the head of the Teamsters Union, much like his father was before his mysterious disappearance back in the 70s. And he was warming up the crowd for President Obama at this major Labor Day event in Detroit. And, of course, Jim, this comes just months after the Change the Tone speech in Tucson. And since that time, the president has, of course, said that the conservatives are holding a gun to the head of the American people on the debt ceiling, hostage takers. Joe Biden says we're terrorists. James Hoffa not exactly ratcheting down the rhetoric.
We got to keep an eye on the battle that we face, a war on workers. And you see it everywhere. It is the Tea Party. And, you know, there's only one way to beat and win that war. The one thing about working people is we like a good fight. And you know what? They got a war. They got a war with us. And there's only going to be one winner. It's going to be the workers of Michigan and America. We're going to win that war.
Now, the war rhetoric was bad enough. If you got kids in the room, you might want to turn this down or hit pause on your podcast, because Hoffa was not done. He made it abundantly clear what he thinks this next campaign is all about.
President Obama, this is your army. We are ready to march. Let's take these son of a bitches out and give America back to America where we belong. Thank you very much.
Boy, hard to see where that stereotype of union thugs comes from, Jim. I just don't see it from that speech from James Hoffa. And the funny part has been that Obama has had nothing to say, or even out of a paper statement, Jay Carney, somebody, saying that probably went a little bit far. Debbie Wasserman Schultz went on TV and was babbling her way around the question because she simply can't say that might have gone a little bit too far. Clearly, if there is an upper ground on rhetoric right now, I'm pretty sure the president and his party have lost it.
Greg, I'm just going to make three observations. This bothers me on three levels. First, the implied violence, even though in the preceding sentence he talked about voting. Worse, language at a presidential event. There was a time in America where you wouldn't use the term son of a bitch in a introduction of the president at an event that I didn't think was considered a party fundraiser or anything like that. It's supposedly a presidential Labor Day event, so that's kind of striking. When I say there was a time in America where that was unthinkable, I mean 2 days ago.
that's right.
And then thirdly, I mean, as bad as the implied violence is, as bad as the language, the worst of all, Greg, the grammar. It's sons of bitches, not son of bitches. You know, I mean, unless he's talking about one person, one male son of multiple women who he was using the B word. And I just don't understand the logic of this. Maybe it was one of those surrogate motherhood sort of things. But yeah, the logic just doesn't even hold up to it. So bad, 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 Mr. Hoffa. And, you know, I suppose there's a reason he just had to have these things. Now, I would point out that I think it was Nathan Wurzel who said, you know, really, in New Jersey, this is like saying I disagree with the right honorable gentleman. This is kind of standard for the Hoffa waters. But nonetheless, I think there is no presidential decorum. And it is kind of striking that they're hopefully like – there will be a day where this comes back where you just don't see this kind of rhetoric at a presidential event. But, you know, we're in a different time, Greg.
On to the crazy martini now. And we like Sarah Palin. I think from the four folks that were on the major party tickets in 2008, I don't think most people would disagree that out of the four, I would much rather have her president than any of the other three. However, we are getting well into September now. Kids are back to school. And it's time for Sarah Palin to put up or shut up. She did this big build-up with a lot of
Rhino. Okay, I'm just letting you know which email. That is Greg Columbus of Radio America to all the Palin fans out there listening.
Exactly. If she wants to get in the race, great. If she doesn't want to get in the race but wants to play a major role in this campaign, I think that's great. However, with her staff promoting this event in Iowa that she spoke at, she's talking about her plan. She still doesn't know what she wants to do. It's time to make a decision. And I think some folks along the way, if she wants to tease the media, that's fine. That's what they're following around like they've done that bus tour like crazy. But people who are donors, people who are organizers, people who are loyal to her and have other options over the next few months as this campaign gets heated up, they need to know what's going to happen here and where they want to put their energies going forward here. We're running out of time, and I just wish she would make a decision.
Rhino! just feels good to say that. Greg, I get to say that so rarely to other folks. I'm usually the recipient of that. By and large, I agree with you. You will be denounced for the put up or shut up phrasing right after we just talked about the importance of civil discourse. But the thing I'll know, Greg, is that you're right. The unofficial deadline for this is November 1st. That's when you have to file in South Carolina. I believe the filing fee is something like $25,000. And I believe the day before, she or her supporters would have to petition to have her on the ballot in Florida. So really, Halloween is the official deadline. If she's decided and she wants to run, I don't see what she gets by waiting another 2 months. A couple of readers were saying, oh, you know, this gives the rest of the field more time to beat each other up. And I'm like, well, yeah, but they're going to keep beating each other up even if she's in there. I'm not quite sure if delay helps her. I think putting together a campaign team more difficult. Now, some folks would say, oh, she doesn't need a campaign team. This is going to be a grassroots campaign, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just not think that's a realistic perspective of how you run campaigns in the modern era. If she doesn't want to run, then I think you're right. I think the perpetual tease does not really help her or anybody else in the Republican Party. I think she'd just come out and say, you know what, I'm not running. It's time to evaluate the rest of the field. And then we can all get onto the real decision, which is, you know, the real point of question that we all should be, you know, obsessing with, which is who's Palin going to endorse? And then, of course, we can follow her around in every speech and wonder if the endorsement's coming, et cetera. I think it was a perfectly fine speech she gave the other day. But I think that people were waiting, all right, and you've just diagnosed the problem with the country, now what? And there was nothing there. And so needless to say, I think what was at least read on text to be a perfectly fine speech left a lot of people just exasperated, wondering, all right, this is a campaign-style speech. What do you want to do? Because I think there's probably money on the sidelines. I think there's grassroots supporters who are waiting for a chance to know what they need to do. I don't see what you get by delaying. I mean, the votes will start basically in January. So presumably she would have 2 months to begin to get organized in a place like in Iowa. Again, if you have disagreed with anything I have said here, I would just say direct your critiques to Greg Corumbus at Radio America.
That's exactly right. And, you know, of course, if she decides to get in now, she can hire Ed Rollins because he's no longer with the Bachman campaign.
In case she feels like things are going too well, too smooth, not enough internal dissent. Rollins is there. By the way, I also point out that by directing criticism to you, Greg, I'm tossing you under the bus. But a friend of mine, Flint Dilley, has said being thrown under the bus is a really tired, trite phrase now. We've been hearing it around Obama for like 3 or 4 years. So his new phrase is gold-fingered, which is the question is who's going to get sucked out the plane window and careen down to the earth below. So I think I may just refer to that phenomenon as gold fingering in the future.
Very good. A new phrase being coined. And I'll take the emails. Again, I like Sarah Palin. I just think she should make a call. Anyway, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Jim.
See you, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.